This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. In December, a record 300,000 migrants were processed at the U.S.-Mexico border, according to Customs and Border Protection numbers. The U.S. has requested that the Mexican government do more to address the situation. Meanwhile, Congress will have to resolve its long-running debates over immigration policy to avoid a partial government shutdown later this month. We're talking now about the politics and reality of immigration and the U.S.-Mexico border, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from the White House? What do you want to see Congress do when it comes to immigration policy? Do you have connections to this border story yourself? Did you migrate north from Mexico or further south into the United States, or did a family member? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And are there things about the situation you find confusing or you don't understand? I promise you're not alone. If so, join in with your questions. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Vonda Felbob-Brown is a senior fellow in the Strobe Talbot Center for Security, Strategy, and Technology in the Foreign Policy Program at the Brookings Institution, where she also directs the Initiative on Non-State Armed Actors. She's an expert on internal and international organized crime. Vonda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Great to be back.
First of all, can you talk about, we see a lot of different numbers, encounters and people processed and trying to gauge how many people cross the border undetected. Can you give us a sense of how big these numbers are right now and what's driving that?
Well, the numbers are very big. So in fiscal year 2023, that's through October 2023, there were well over 2 million encounters between U.S. government and migrants. So what does that mean? That means that migrants were either caught by Border Patrol officials or very frequently handed themselves over to Border Patrol officials to start their asylum claim. And those numbers are about double what we saw in the 1990s, where the encounters were over 1 million. In 1999, they reached 1.6 million, roughly. So those are very large numbers indeed. And they have put significant strain on very many aspects of the border, including the operations of U.S. Border Patrol and asylum officers and judicial officers who process the cases, but also, of course, communities. So just to give a little bit of perspective, you know, you mentioned 300,000 alone in December. What that amounted to would be, in some cases, more than 10,000 encounters in a day. And those encounters are something that result in U.S. authorities having to take action, move the migrants into detention, provide them with shelters, initiating their asylum cases. Sometimes people are expelled right away. Frequently, that's not the case. There is a time period before deportation expulsion takes place, both because the person is deemed ineligible, or in some cases, because some people can be processed abroad. And those are very much part of the debates, how to restructure those policies between Republican and Democratic side of the Congress and with the White House.
And what is driving the numbers of people coming to the United States? Is it a perception, as Republicans argue, that immigration enforcement is more lax under the Biden administration? Is it what's happening in the countries of origin of people? What is leading so many people to show up at the southern border now?
Well, it's a mixture of factors. Certainly, the internal drivers that push people to leave their countries are fundamental. They include pervasive insecurity, whether that's physical insecurity across Latin America. This would be violence from criminal groups. But we are also seeing people from far away, from Africa, from China, from India, from Russia and Ukraine, trying to get across the U.S.-Mexico border to claim asylum. In other cases, it's economic insecurity. This would apply to a lot of people coming from Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua. And both factors are now compounded by something we would not have talked about 20 years ago in the 1990s when we were talking about migration. And this is the issue of climate change. Now, criminal groups play a significant role. Smuggling networks play a significant role in shaping as well as diversifying the patterns and sources, countries of migration. We have, for example, see the smuggling networks that operate at the U.S.-Mexico border, sometimes involving large Mexican cartels, but not always, expanding their recruitment, even in faraway places like Morocco and West Africa. And they are telling migrants that they can get them into the U.S. border and that winning an asylum case will be easy. Now, that is not the case. The vast majority of people will not have a favorable response to the asylum case. The vast majority of people will be denied asylum. The U.S. asylum system is actually very restrictive. The bar of reasonable fear is rather high and often applies not to issues of criminal violence or even broadly conflict violence, but specific discriminations on the basis of ethnicity or religion. So it's far easier being someone from China claiming asylum on the basis of oppression against Christian faith to get asylum than someone who had his family members murdered by Central American gangs, perhaps children forcibly recruited. And the odds that the latter person on the basis of criminal violence claiming asylum will be denied is very high.
House Speaker Mike Johnson visited the border in Texas with a delegation of Republican members of the House. Here he is talking after that visit.
Remember, it was on his very first day in office that President Biden stopped construction of the southern border wall, and he ended the Remain in Mexico policy. It was estimated on our tour just a moment ago that if the Biden administration would reinstate just the Remain in Mexico policy, it could stem the flow by probably 70% or more. But he refuses to do it.
Can you talk about that Remain in Mexico policy? Remind us what it is. And then the back and forth since Biden has come into office on Remain in Mexico.
Sure. So Remain in Mexico is a policy that's formally called Title 42 that the Trump administration put into place on the basis of the COVID pandemic. Essentially, it used the COVID pandemic and the internal restrictions and implications related to COVID, internal policies related to COVID, as a justification to be expelling immediately those who tried to cross the border and were applying for asylum. Now, the U.S. couldn't do it on its own. It had to persuade the Mexican government to allow people claiming asylum to remain in Mexico. And those would be not only Mexican people, obviously, which whom the Mexican government is obligated to take back, but these would be people from Central America, from Venezuela, from Cuba, from other parts of the world. So currently there are about 70,000 people who were expelled during the Title 42 rule that went through this May, awaiting the asylum cases to be adjudicated. And by the way, I should have mentioned already that because of the backlog in the judicial asylum processes, it takes years and years to have a case heard and decided. And so that's one reason why people are trying to get into the U.S., because if they get into the U.S. and they are released into the country, they get some form of parole. They will likely be living in the United States for years before they get a yes or no decision. Now, Title 42 was specifically linked to COVID. And the moment the emergency related to COVID was ended, Title 42 expired. The Biden administration was actually very troubled by the fact that this would end the policy of being able to deport people to Mexico to adjudicate their cases there. They were very unhappy with that outcome. And already then, back in May, in April, there were negotiations between the U.S. government and the Mexican government to find some way of extending this policy. And indeed, there are already policies in place that subsequent to the expiration of Title 42 are keeping people in Mexico. Now, all this migration issue has really dominated in an extremely unhealthy way U.S.-Mexico relations. and has given the Mexican government an extraordinary leverage over U.S. policy and very many aspects of U.S. policy and very many U.S. interests, be there the diminishment of democracy in Mexico under the administration of President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, its abysmal policy toward criminal groups in Mexico, really giving up on law enforcement. And essentially, the Mexican government has been able to get away with taking all kinds of problematic policies countering crucial U.S. interests because it cooperates sometimes, but for a price, on migrants, on stopping caravans of migrants, flows of migrants to the U.S., and allowing the Mexican territory to host migrants for years while the cases are being heard in the U.S.
Vonda Felbab-Brown is with us, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She's talking with us about immigration policy in the U.S.-Mexico border. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about immigration, asylum, and border policy. Your thoughts, what you'd like to see happen. Do you want to see Congress reach a big deal when it comes to immigration? What should it look like? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about the U.S.-Mexico border and immigration policy with Vonda Felbab-Brown, senior fellow in the Strobe Talbot Center for Security, Strategy, and Technology, the Foreign Policy Program at Brookings. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls. Ronald is with us in Appleton. Ronald, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Ronald?
I can't understand why some time back the government didn't establish some kind of Ellis Island type of process for all these immigrants. Our nation is a nation of immigrants. And instead of spending money on a wall that's proven to be ineffective, we should be spending more money on asylum judges and creating some kind of processing system like Ellis Island was.
Ronald, thanks a lot for the call. And Ivana, that takes us to what Democrats and Republicans on Congress are calling for. And indeed, what Ronald said, Democrats are, as I understand it, looking for more funding for border security, including people to process these asylum claims.
Yes, that's absolutely the case. So the deal that's in the making consists of a White House offer to add about $14 billion to border security, in exchange for which the Congress, the Republican side, would authorize a budget that would give tens of billions of aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. And the budget deal is not passed. That, of course, means that the United States is heading into partial government shutdown. There are two important dates, January 19th and February 2nd, by which a set of bills needs to be passed, or we're looking at a partial government shutdown with all its many negative repercussions. So there is some consensus between Democrats and Republicans as to the nature of the changes. But there are many disagreements.
Right. Can you talk about some of the things Republicans are holding out for that Democrats in the White House might not sign on to?
Right. So the very big sticky point is the issue of parole, which is the ability of the U.S. president to give on a provisional basis allowing on a discretional basis for people to stay in the United States while their case is being heard. Now, the Republicans don't want to eliminate parole, but they argue that parole should be very sporadic, given essentially on a case-by-case individual basis. Whereas the Biden administration has used it, as has been the case many times before in U.S. history, on a much broader case, ethnic group basis. So people who have historically been given advance parole, for example, are refugees from Afghanistan, people from Vietnam, those Filipino families during World War II. In recent cases, the Biden administration has used parole to allow 50,000 migrants per month to come from Haiti, Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua, as long as they have legal sponsor in the United States. Now, the parole doesn't mean that they are just given asylum on arrival. What it means is that they are allowed to be in the U.S. and work while their case is being heard, which can take years. The Republican side really doesn't like this approach and wants to very much restrict parole. And many issues are at stake, including the scope of presidential authorities. So that's one major sticking point. But it's interesting to note that on the Democratic side, there has been quite significant move to agree to several other Republican demands, including speeding up deportations, also of family units, something that was enormously controversial and during the Trump administration. And of course, we remember Trump's brutality of separating children from families. The second big agreement from the Democratic side is limiting asylum cases, making the initial screening much tougher in what already is a very unlikely process to win an asylum. And finally, very quick expulsion when crossings become very high. The parole is the big sticking case on which the deal might fall apart, or that's where the issues are. Now, I mentioned that the Democratic side has moved toward accepting these 3 points, quick expulsions, limiting asylum claims, tightening the screening, and speeding up deportations. But it's only some part of Democrats. Those policies are strongly disliked by the progressives and by the Hispanic, by many Hispanic members of Congress.
Talking to Vonda Felbob-Brown from the Brookings Institution, looking at immigration policy and the U.S.-Mexico border. Back to your calls. Steve is with us in La Crosse. Steve, hi.
Hi, thank you. She's just partially answered my question. I've seen the Biden administration, despite his campaign promises, gravitate more towards Trump-era policies, and such as a border wall. And I'm just wondering how much difference the guest sees between the two policies right now.
Steve, thanks for the call. And referring to the border wall, I believe the Biden administration moved ahead to build some sections on border wall, but argued that past laws passed by Congress required them to do that. How much continuity do you see, Vonda, between the Trump White House and the Biden White House on these immigration issues?
Well, the policy has evolved. I mean, certainly President Biden took office amidst widespread outcry against the Trump administration era policies, and certainly Trump's very racist scapegoating of migrants, which candidate Trump continues today, even using language out of Hitler's Mein Kampf in some of the recent campaigns in a really egregious manner. But as the numbers of migrants escalated dramatically and pressure built, not just from the Republican side, but also from the Democratic side on the administration to either stop or restrict, reduce the flows or provide much more extensive aid to cities that have been hit very hard, not just border places, but cities like New York, Chicago, Denver, the administration started looking for more restrictions. So I mentioned already that the Biden administration was very unhappy with the prospect of Title 42 ending as the COVID exception emergency declaration would end. There has been a little bit of restarting of the border wall, not as much as is often claimed, but there has been some moves. This has, again, disappointed many of the liberals who opposed the wall. The Biden administration has tried to explain the restarting of the building essentially on the basis of budgetary restrictions that was passed by the Congress. The budget was allocated just for constructing the wall. The administration was unable to renegotiate those obligations with the Congress and had to move toward construction. But the wall really has not been the principal focus. And again, there is debate about what does tightening the border, what does restriction mean? For example, in the $14 billion that the White House offered to dedicate in the budget proposal deal, it wanted to put significant chunk of that to hiring new numbers of asylum officers, not just border patrol agents. The Republicans don't always like strengthening the judicial part of the processing system that's necessary.
I want to take just our last minute and a half or so, Vonda, and talk about something we've talked about before, the flow of fentanyl from Mexico into the United States. A lot of it comes across that border. But is it actually linked to migrants and immigration seekers? How does fentanyl tend to actually cross the Mexico-U.S. border?
Well, the vast majority of fentanyl is captured in legal ports of entry, smuggled by U.S. citizens with cars or trucks with U.S. license plates. And that amounts to over 90% of fentanyl flows captured at the borders. The Republican side will make the claim, well, we don't know about all these immigrants who illegally entered the United States and never were caught, and they were carrying so much fentanyl. Out of those who were illegally crossing and were apprehended, it's really very, very tiny minority that have been found with any fentanyl.
And Vonda, very briefly, what are you watching for next from Congress? What do you expect to see come out of this latest negotiation?
Well, it's really momentous, right? Are we going to head into a border, into a U.S. government shutdown, even partial or not? And of course, just the latest iteration is part and parcel of the drama of this Congress and the previous Congress with budget. The principal responsibility, constitutionally obligated responsibility of the Congress is to pass a budget and to fund the government. And this has been an enormous struggle. I certainly expect that the border issue will dominate politics and electoral campaigns as we head into presidential elections. But in the most immediate period is the question whether we will end up with a very counterproductive government shutdown, even if partial or not.
Vonda, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Vonda Felbob-Brown is with the Brookings Institution. She joined us today to talk about potential policy changes regarding the U.S.-Mexico border and immigration, and for a look at what's driving high numbers of people arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border.